Welcome into the Siouxland Sports Insider College Football Podcast. Entering week two here. Really enjoyed all the action last weekend, Mitch. Great way to start the season. And again, we're joined by Garrett Glass, who is on our Husker beat for us here for our college podcast. And, you know, you look at this game, it's going to be interesting. So one thing here, though, if you want to catch the game, head down to Doc's Firehouse, our main sponsor for our college podcast. Going to be busy over there at both bars. Big screens everywhere. Great place to take in the games. And we'd like to thank Size Locker Room for their sponsorship, and also the Black and Gold Shop for the Iowa sponsorship as well. So I'm going to bring Garrett in, Garrett Glass. You know, huge game for Nebraska here on the road. Much talked about in the offseason. And what's your thoughts, first of all, just a short recap of next week and then kind of prelude into Saturday's big game?
Yeah, short recap would be, you said it was a great weekend, which it was a great weekend unless you were a Husker fan. It's deja vu.
Yeah.
All over again.
Yeah.
You know, I think there was under 5 minutes left. Nebraska had a 95% probability to win that game. And, you know, it's new coach, new this, new that, and it's same ending. And need to find a way mentally to get over that hump and learn how to put teams away. But, yeah, that was a tough one. I mean, that was a – if you're a Nebraska fan, that was a kick in the you-know-what.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that was a game I thought, you know, outside the first quarter, I thought they were the better team for the most part. The second, third, and fourth quarters, costly turnovers, the three interceptions, that fumble was huge.
Yeah.
But, you know, on the flip side, Nebraska did look better. They looked more physical.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it seems like every year since PJ Fleck's been there, they've been, you know, ramming the ball down Nebraska's throats, and
mm-hmm.
somebody's between 100 and 150 yards rushing. There was none of that last Thursday, so
right.
That's a pop. Yeah, big positive. I think 2.2 yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska held Minnesota to rushing.
Mm-hmm.
Defense looked surprisingly good. Offense looked, I don't think anybody had too high of expectations, but it looked, you know, worse than most thought. They just need to put four quarters together, get rid of the boneheaded mistakes. They'd be 1-0 right now. It is what it is. You know, it's, I don't know, they tell the team you got 24 hours to think back on it. I was kind of sick to my stomach all weekend thinking about
yeah,
it.
Right.
But, yeah, time to turn the page, move on to Colorado,
yeah.
Who, you know, before the season, if someone would have told you Colorado's 1-0 ranked 22nd, you know,
yeah.
You'd say, well, what? No, what?
Yeah, exactly.
So they got an opportunity here to bounce back.
Yeah, they do. Mitch, go ahead.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, for the matchup, we talked a little bit off mic before. It's an intriguing matchup, you know, Garrett, looking at it. Two basically almost polar opposite offenses. One likes to air the ball out really well. One likes to do more of the ground and pound. Maybe that's just because of the quarterback position. And then, you know, you go to the defensive side of the ball. It favors each offense. I think Nebraska's susceptible of giving up plays more through the air than they are on the ground, and Colorado's more susceptible to giving yards on the ground than they are through the air. Both offenses, I think, are going to be key in this one to be able to move the ball. It's going to kind of have an old Big Eight feel to it, you know, with the two teams in conference. But, you know, matchup-wise, I think both teams favor it on offense. It's going to be who makes the least amount of mistakes on offense.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right about that, Mitch. That was, you know, Nebraska's Achilles heel was the passing game, primarily on third down against Minnesota, is where they struggled. And Colorado, conversely, gave up, 262 rushing yards to TCU, which was
yeah.
good for 7.1 yards a carry. So, I mean,
unbelievable.
Each team sees the blueprint there of, you know, how they're going to move the ball. Agree with what you said. I mean, Nebraska running the ball have got to stick to that, and Colorado's game plan is going to be to come out and air it out. And, you know, TCU runs the 3-3-5, which is what Nebraska's running this year. And I think TCU kind of showed the game plan of what not to do. you know, rushing three, giving Sanders all day to throw back there.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, that's a recipe for disaster. You have to get after him. And he was accurate on the run, so there's no guarantee that,
right,
you know, getting him to scramble, he's not going to be as efficient. But you've got to get some pressure on him. And I think you still got to stop the run. You know, every game seems like the team who wins, you know, is the team who can run the ball and who can stop the run. So I still think that's got to be the primary goal for Nebraska. And then you're putting your defenders out there on an island with Travis Hunter and some of those other transfer receivers.
Yeah, they're good.
Tough to defend. That's what you're going to have to do.
Yeah. No, and I think you made a good comment off air before we got going here that, you know, hey, if you're Nebraska, go with the ground game. And, you know, Sims is really good on the move, running the football. And, you know, like you said, bleed that play clock out, man. You don't, no need to be in any hurry. Maybe, in my opinion, Nebraska needs to be the more patient team on Saturday. As long as that quarterback and his offense over on the sideline, they can't hurt you. So, you know, maybe that's the formula for success. I don't know. What's your thoughts, Mitch?
Well, and I was going to say, too, what do you guys think about the new rule with the clock
moving? Really,
I've seen coaches on both polar sides of it. I kind of like it just because I feel like the college game, after every first down, every time it went out of bounds, it kind of elongated the game. And for people that want to run, I guess it's more beneficial for people that want to run up-tempo offense. Because you got to get to the line a lot quicker because the clock's always moving and you want to keep the defense on their heels, whereas like the more ground and pound game, you run it up, you get your big boys lined up, and you really just go at the teeth of it. I'm more on the side of I like the new rule change. I just want to kind of get your guys' feel on what you thought after week one. Was it beneficial, or was it kind of, did it kind of set us back a little bit?
I'll let you lead, Garrett. Go ahead.
You know, I can't put my finger on it, but I wasn't a huge fan of it. And maybe that's, but I don't know, because I reached to change with some of that stuff. And mm-hmm. I kind of like the way it was set up with, you know, stopping the clock after first downs, et cetera. And it's something I'll get used to. And I'm sure, mm-hmm. you know, later on down the road here, it'll be no big deal. But it's different. Definitely different. Can't say I was huge fan of it, but it is what it is. I'll adjust and get over it.
Yeah, my thoughts on it are, I think it depends who your team is.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, being a Hawkeye fan, I appreciate the way that Iowa likes to hog the ball in time of possession, because there's no secret anymore. They rely on the defense. Yes, you got to score, but again, I mentioned earlier, hey, when the other team's on the sideline, they can't score. Hopefully, unless you throw a pick six or something really goes bad. I'm a fan of it. It was weird for me the first week, but the more games I tuned into, I had a better understanding of what it's going to do to the game. And, you know, again, I think it aligns with whatever type of offense you're running. So if you're a run-and-gun type team, I don't know. Does that speed you up? You know, I don't know. But as far as me, if you're a team that huddles up and the play clock's running down, you get to the line of scrimmage with 10, 11 seconds left, you know, it's favorable, but, you know,
you can't make any adjustment. You get to the line and you want to audible to something. You have 6 seconds left on the play clock. You have to go with the play that's at hand.
Yeah,
it's
hard to audible. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, and then the other thing with that is, you know, if it does speed teams up, is it going to create more turnovers? You know, so just a few thoughts that I have. I'm going to watch this weekend various games and just kind of see if I can, you know, get a better handle on what it's actually going to do.
Yeah, and then I guess question mainly for you, Garrett, but I guess you can go for anyone. Going into this game, Colorado 1-0, Nebraska 0-1. Who is underneath the most pressure, coach wise? You know, for Matt Rhule, you don't want to start off 0-2. For Deion, now you just beat a ranked team that went to the national championship last year. Granted, they don't have the same players, but All the media, all the spotlight is on you. What did Deion do week one? What is he going to be able to do week two?
Does
Nebraska, after losing that game to Minnesota, be able to sit back and be like, hey, we're not the team that everyone's looking at.
Mm-hmm.
We can afford to make mistakes and not have it impact the game as much as what it would as if we
That's
were
a great question.
Underneath the spotlight? Who do you think's underneath more pressure going into the week two game? Would it be Sanders or would it be Matt Rhule?
That is a great question. And personally, I mean, who's under more pressure? I think there's already some, you know, I don't even know what the correct adjective is for some of the fans here in Nebraska who are, you know, all comparing Rhule to Frost already. You know, it's been one game.
Yeah.
And I do think, you know, if Coach Rhule starts the season 0-2, with losses to, you know, conference rival Minnesota and then the old Big Eight rival Colorado and Deion Sanders, it's, you know, I'm not going to say the honeymoon's over because I'm a realist and understand this is going to take some time to get, you know, new culture bred within the program and instilled in the program. And,
yeah.
You know, the season's a lot longer than just the first two games of the year. Yeah. However, Deion, I mean, I just read a stat this morning that during the Colorado TCU game, Coach Sanders was talked about 56 times during the telecast, and Coach Dykes at TCU, his name was brought up 10 times. So I mean, they love Deion.
Yeah,
I
think spotlight is on
if
him.
He goes
for sure.
out, you know, he's already showed he can win and pull an upset on the road. He's got the fan base believing. If he goes out and, you know, loses to Nebraska, I still think there's more pressure on Rhule if he starts 0-2 rather than Deion starting 1-1. He's already proved himself, you know, to a degree with the TCU win. Like you said, it's not the same team from last year. They returned, I think, 18% of the starters starting production from last year. But I would say definitely. I mean, Coach Rhule, you start 0-2, which is, you know, you're an underdog for the second straight week now.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, it's very probable, but that's a lot of pressure on you.
Yeah.
Marty, go ahead with your thought.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that, you know, I'm kind of tired of Deion already. It's kind of what I was going to say because I saw his post-game press conference and he was basically lecturing the media. So I'm curious to see what happens when he loses, if they can nitpick him, you know, in the post-game press conference. I know that won't happen, but I'm just saying.
Great point.
Hey, let's win with some class. Let's lose with some class, you know. I mean, I know he wants all the media attention on that, but, you know, that table can get turned very quickly too. So, in my opinion, he's under the most pressure because he's got to follow up what happened last Saturday over in Fort Worth when they had a good day. But, you know, not every day is a good day. We all know that. So I'm curious to see how they respond if, you know, they have a little bit of adversity Saturday. Do they panic? Do they start going deep all the time? It'll be interesting to see.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And both coaches are huge motivators, so they're going to have their teams ready for the game on Saturday. That one kicks off before the Iowa State game on Fox.
Yep.
Should be a good one.
Yep.
My TV's not going to leave Fox from 11 o'clock kickoff till probably 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah.
It should be a good opening start. I think it's got to be Fox, like, big noon kickoff.
Yeah, it's big noon. Gets started there at 9, I believe. And then Nebraska-Colorado, 11. And Iowa State, 2:30. And then there's got to be – who's the follow-up later that night?
Honestly probably just depends on what side of the country you're on, but going into Fox, I'm trying to see here. I know, could it be the Oklahoma game? That's ESPN Plus. There's so many weird games that are like just sprinkled throughout because, it's the Texas Tech Oregon game. That's right.
That's right. Okay.
Because there's games that are being on Peacock, ESPN Plus.
Yeah,
I can't keep track of where all these games are going. But yeah, that's another good one because Texas Tech just took a loss last week that I didn't see coming against
Wyoming.
And then Oregon literally beat up a team so bad that they injured some of the other kids on the other side of Portland State. That's an intriguing matchup just because is Oregon and part of the Pac-12 really back? Because Oregon every year just goes out and obliterates their first couple opponents, gets into Pac-12 play, and then they get a little bit of a humbled realization pie.
That might be a snake pit in Lubbock.
It's gonna be a good one. You don't want to start off 0-2. Texas Tech, they had high hopes. They were a sleeper pick for the Big 12.
Right.
So it's just gonna be a team that's gonna have to. And another thing is, quarterback starting for Texas Tech used to play at Oregon.
That's right.
So another underliner there too. But yeah, no. Talking about switching gears from Nebraska and Colorado to Iowa and Iowa State, a game that's got as much publicity as the Colorado Nebraska game and those two states as it does here. This Iowa Iowa State game is different just because of what happened in the offseason with transfer portal, what happened in the offseason with the betting scandals. This game it seems like it has a lot more to it than just the Cy-Hawk series.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious to see your takes on it and then obviously how you think the game is going to turn out on Saturday, Marty.
Sure. Yeah. No, I expect another tough game. Iowa State prepared well last week. I look for more of the same this week. I know the Iowa staff has great respect for Iowa State and defensive coordinator Jim Heacock. He does a great job with that defense over there at Iowa State. And, again, you saw Iowa last week. Veteran quarterback in Cade McNamara that started. He's got some rust, and he's slightly injured, So it's going to take some time. I do like his decision-making at quarterback. I think that's going to be extremely, extremely beneficial as the season moves along. For me, this game seems to always turn on a turnover or something like that. I think if you go back and look, 14 of the last 15 winners in this series, the team that has had the most rushing attempts has won the game. So that's an interesting stat to me. Iowa State's got a good lineage of running backs that have, just continue to perform in the NFL and do great things. And they've got, Mitch and I watched Abu Sama in the dome at the state championship last year, and he was incredible. He hits the hole really hard, and he already had a few moments last week against UNI. And then you contrast that with Iowa, who still kind of waiting to get that running game going. Caleb Johnson, a running back for Iowa, he's a playmaker in the running game. Really good football player. He did good last year as a true freshman, running for over 600 yards behind what basically was, a not great offensive line. So you need a couple things to happen. You need these kids to get in the offensive line, get bigger in the offseason, which they did. They got stronger. You just hope that you can put a consistent running game together on the road. That's the best medicine when you're traveling. I think this game is going to be determined on field position, just like it normally is. And I think special teams and that hidden yardage is really going to come into play. What's your thoughts, Mitch?
Kind of the same way. You talk about just how both teams are able to move the ball. I think quarterback-wise, Iowa State took a little bit of a step down from last year. I think Hunter Deckers threw the ball extremely well, played one of his best games against Iowa. And then obviously going from Petras over to McNamara, it's night and day difference. You're getting guys the ball. Granted, he probably has a better plethora of receivers to throw to with Eric Hall at tight end coming over. You got Brown and some other transfers that have done a really good job. Seth Anderson as well.
Yeah.
Just an offense that is able to move the ball through the air, and I thought would be able to move the ball a little bit better on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Both offensive lines last year, just put it out there, were atrocious. They could not block.
Yeah.
The run game suffered from it. The passing game suffered from it. And They've had a whole year to develop. Now, the development of the Iowa offensive line is always intriguing because they take guys that don't play freshman and sophomore year. Junior year, they get their chance. They go in, and all of a sudden, by the time they're seniors, you know, they're either academic All-Americans or all Big Ten teams, and they go get drafted for a second, third round and have, you know, illustrious NFL careers. Where on the Iowa State side, it hasn't been that way for very, very often, but you get a offensive line coach coming from Northern Iowa that's groomed a couple offensive tackles, offensive linemen to go to the NFL. It's supposed to be an improved offensive line, and I didn't see too much of it against UNI. There were different parts. UNI's got a really good defensive front. They play, you know, in the conference that they play, and they're going to give a lot of teams troubles. And they have a really good quarterback that's going to be able to take them to where they want to go this year. But I didn't see the nastiness and the toughness from the offensive line that they're going to need to show in week two, because both teams are going up against really good defensive fronts. I don't care if a D tackle's out for Iowa, and I don't care that Will McDonald graduated last year from Iowa State. There's still guys on defensive fronts and in the linebacking corps that can cause problems for these offensive lines. And if either one isn't up to par, that team that lets through quarterback and gets quarterback pressures, that the team that's able to do that on the defensive side is going to end up winning the game.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Should be a hell of a game, Mitch. It's going to be a dandy. So I know Iowa walked off the field, a home loss last year in the series, and I know they've had quite a while to think about that. So we'll see what happens in Ames on Saturday. But looking forward to some great football all weekend long. I mean, man, if you're a college football fan, it's just now starting to crank up. So, and like Mitch mentioned earlier, conference matchups coming up here soon. We'll know a lot more about all of our teams here in the next 2-3 weeks. So look forward to the action this weekend. Any final thoughts, Mitch?
I just, you know, going into the Iowa-Iowa State game, for an Iowa State fan, like, you know, looking on paper, I think Iowa has the advantage, as I thought they did last year. It's just going to be how our young quarterback, and I said this last year, how our young quarterback performs in a game against a legit defense, you know, with the job that Phil Parker and all the rest of the defensive staff has been able to do at Iowa. It's no secret. They're one of the best defenses in the Big Ten and one of the best defenses all around. They have multiple draft picks. They're probably going to go first round. You know, Cooper DeJean, obviously one of them. And, you know, we saw a team in Utah State go away from Cooper just because they were so afraid of the plays he'd make. And then you try to attack down the field and Xavier Wamp is making a play.
Yeah.
There's guys all over the field defensively that can make it happen. Last year, it was evident that Tom Manning was going to just run the ball, dink and dump, do anything they could to minimalistically not turn the ball over and move down the field as effectively as possible. This year now with offensive coordinator Shielhaus, a little bit different feel in the UNI game. They aired it out well. They were efficient quarterback-wise. They ran the ball better than when they did against UNI in years past. I'm curious to see with how the offense looks against a defense that's probably going to be the best they see all year. Should be a good one. And then you flip it to the other side. You know, I think McNamara has to have a good game. Can't turn the ball over against Iowa State. Very opportunistic guys on defense for Iowa State. Just as good a defenders on our side of the ball than on your side of the ball too. And then it's going to come down to special teams. It always does with Iowa and Iowa State. You go back to the year the rain delay, Game Day one, where Iowa State probably could have gone down and kicked a field goal, but muffed a punt to lose the game. And you know, you have two really good punters in the game. You know, I think Taylor probably had one of his quote unquote worst punting games of the season and still hit the crap out of the ball. In this game, it's going to be another low scoring one. I could see like 21-14. It's going to be a drag it out type of game, a game that, you know, I think the under over is what, at 36 or something like that?
36.5 or 36, yeah.
If it goes over, it barely goes over. Yeah. It's going to be another game where it's going to be defensive oriented. And I think that no matter what, if whatever team loses this game, if they're able to bring out bright spots of it, both of these teams can lose this game and completely turn their season around and only have one loss going into week 6 or 7, I think, is the way that it looks for both these teams. But I'm just excited to finally have the weight lifted off the shoulders. You know, the Seahawk game's the game that I always worry about early in the season, and then I move on to, okay, what are we going to do against Oklahoma? What are we going to do against Texas?
Yeah.
To get that weight lift off our shoulders going into the Ohio game, win or loss, I'll be excited, but it's going to be a great matchup, man. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it should be. The place will be bananas. Looking forward to it. Well, thanks again for Garrett Glass joining us. Appreciate your time, Garrett, and your insight on Husker football. And we'd like to thank our sponsors again, Docks and Firehouse, downtown Sioux City. Get down there this weekend. All kinds of football, wall-to-wall on the televisions down there. And Size Locker Room, and also the Black and Gold Shop for the Iowa Hawkeyes. So for Garrett Glass and Mitch McCumber, I'm Marty Millard, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week, week 3.